And you know what I do so much now that I'm like, ladies, do this. I literally always ask a man when I'm shiny about anything, because I'm like, I need that like logical perspective to sometimes force me not to do something, even though I really want to do it, because a month later I'm going to be stuck with like this beautiful office in New York City that I don't fucking use, but like that I want.
Completely.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. I am so excited to be having Shannon on from The Social Bungalow. Shannon and I have followed each other and kind of been in each other's corners for a long, long time. And it's beautiful to finally have her on and sharing so much of her wisdom, because she is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to business, marketing, digital marketing, running a business, being a CEO, all those good things. And we definitely ruffled feathers with some of the trends that are happening right now, or just the kind of loopholes that people are getting caught into because they are comparing themselves to other people, thinking that they need to be talking about one certain thing in order to make their business succeed, which isn't the truth. You guys know that I am all for authenticity and authentic marketing, because that is going to get you the brand that you want to be having, the revenue that you want to be making, and most importantly, the trust that you want to be building with your audience so that they actually hire you, and so that you can obviously help them, whether you have a brick and mortar business, whether you're an agency, whether you're an interior designer, or whether you are a coach. Something that we didn't get into in this episode, but I am going to record another episode, which is a Q&A. What was that? A Q&A episode that is going to come out as well on business stuff. It might already be out, so just check the description below, because I left a question box on my Instagram stories the other day for you guys to ask questions. And in there was something around customer service. I have been really passionate about talking about customer service lately with my team, because we do such a fucking impeccable job of customer service. You guys send us the most beautiful notes all the time of how amazing the customer service is, whether it's a DM or whether it's an Instagram. And it just warms my heart so much, because customer service is the most essential thing that you are nailing as a business owner, in my opinion. And I recently had I've kind of been having a really bad experience with something to do with our wedding in regards to customer service. I'm sure I'll like explain it soon. Anyway, nonetheless, it's just like flabbergasting to me that I am paying so much for something. It is obviously a very important part of the day, and every bride would understand like the level of stress if I explain this to you. And the customer service has been absolutely appalling and very, very confusing, because everyone's saying different things, which just goes to show the lack of congruency in their operations and just in the communication and the lines of communication that clearly are not thorough behind the scenes of the business, which obviously then kind of ruins the trust. And you do not want to be breaking your client's trust or your audience's trust, because then they're obviously not going to buy from you, or they're not going to recommend other friends, or they're going to pull out, or whatever it is. At the end of the episode, you would have noticed that we also talked about hiring, and we got a little bit into the nitty-gritty parts of hiring and, you know, a couple important things to be looking out for. Whether it's already done or maybe it's about to be done, the Feminine CEO is going to have, or already has, a few new modules that are being recorded or have been recorded live. So there's plenty of Q&A, which will allow you to, you know, even if you're watching the recording, the Q&A is going to allow you to hear me be malleable with my answers depending on the business and obviously the questions that are being brought to me. And these new modules are all on the topic of hiring. So we're talking about crafting the job description to attract the right people in, going through that whole process of filtering out people and what to be looking for so that you aren't wasting your time getting on interviews that are fucking shit, organizing your interviews and crafting really strong interview questions, and then like what to be looking out for that isn't so obvious in interviews, and then the onboarding and training process to make sure that you are actually hiring the right person for the long term, but also making sure that you're training them in a really effective way. So there are three new live modules. They are long, they are juicy, they are so full of depth in the Feminine CEO. I cannot under-explain or over, I don't know how to say this, whatever. I cannot stress enough how in-depth and broad the Feminine CEO is. Like, we have a ridiculous amount of hours of content in here. There is about 90 something modules at the moment. You have literally everything that you need to take your business to that next level, to scale it, to break through the ceilings, to hire the team, to allow you to refine all of the operations so that you can work less and enjoy your season of motherhood or take time off for your wedding. We're also having like another kind of like season, or whatever I want to call it, like season, session, whatever. It's kind of like a little fun wedding season that we're going to be doing of a series of new modules as well in the Feminine CEO that will be recorded live, all about everything that I've been doing to prepare myself for stepping into motherhood, and then also stepping into having 2 months off for my wedding. And like, obviously I'm going to be off, not just like half off. And so you will get full backstage access to everything, screen recordings, templates, all the things, so that you can make sure that you're also able to set your business up in this way. So if you have an online business, or if you're wanting to get your business to the next level, it could be brick and mortar, or it could be online, or it could be a little bit of both. I've had clients from a whole pile of different industries do the Feminine CEO. It is so profound. It is so fucking worth every single penny. And I honestly think the best bit is that you will never outgrow the program, because I am always adding things into this program. I mean, this program started in 2019. It's still going, and it is fucking huge now. So the Feminine CEO, you can join straight away. If you want to get started, you can get started with my Breaking Through Your Business Ceilings free masterclass, which is also full of information, super juicy, really high vibe, very expansive energy. And the Feminine CEO is there waiting for you. As soon as you join, you get to dive right on in. You get access to every single module straight away, which means that like nothing is being drip-feeded. You don't have to wait, you know, like 3 months until you get access to that module. So you can jump exactly to the section that you need to go to and just thank me later. So without further ado, let's jump into this episode with Shannon. With comprehensive experience in marketing and advertising, Shannon prides herself on helping others structure and market their businesses for exceptional growth. Her journey began in the corporate world, which you guys will learn about today, where she held titles such as VP of marketing for a global publishing company and national director of sales and marketing for a fitness franchise. These varying industries and array of credentials, from pursuing continued education credits in copywriting, utilized to write weekly articles for Forbes at entrepreneur.com, to becoming Google AdWords certified, speak to her insatiable hunger for driving traffic and conversions to remarkable brands. These roles brought her to opportunities to work with L'Oreal, Access Hollywood, The Ellen DeGeneres Show, with marketing access to Kendra Wilkinson, Alex Rodriguez, and Jennifer Lopez. Now she's the CEO and founder of The Social Bungalow, an education company that helps entrepreneurs structure simple yet sophisticated online businesses, as well as Bungalow Coffee, a 2,500 square foot coffee cafe in downtown Las Vegas Arts District. So, Without further ado, I'm tripping over my words because that is where we're at in my cycle. Let's jump in to this episode with Shannon. Okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I am so excited to be welcoming Shannon on today to talk all things business, being a CEO, running your own show, having a very successful business, and of course, leaving corporate to do your own thing. And I definitely also want to talk about your cafe and just having like a brick and mortar aspect to your business, because that's also super different these days. And I know also that's just a whole other kettle of fish compared to running an online business. So welcome, Shannon.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here, get into all yes. the stuff. Thanks for having me.
Good. Of course. Do you want to give everyone like a little bit of a story of you, how you got here, that kind of thing, so they just know who you are?
Yeah. So I started in the corporate world doing marketing. I actually fell into it organically because a family friend had an agency and they needed somebody for social media management. And I just thought I could figure that out. I like social media. Fell in love with it, and then just went kind of, you know, 2 to 5 years at each company, climbing the ranks where I could for different opportunities, doing marketing, ascending to VP of marketing, and then kind of got what I wanted and had this veil drop moment where I realized there's more. There's something else I want to go and chase. Mm-hmm. And so I took the scary leap to start The Social Bungalow, which is my online-based business where I help women do the same. If there's somebody who wants to build, brand, and market their expertise in an online business, I help them with that. Through that, we had enough capital, especially through the kind of surge of people coming online in 2020, to be able to start a lifelong dream for my husband and I, which is starting a brick and mortar coffee shop that is now kind of a full service cafe. And that brings us to today.
So amazing. Okay. So let's start with this question then. What is your most favorite thing about running your own business?
It is so simple, but the ability to have autonomy over where I work, what I do, what the day consists of. I mean, even just from a cycle syncing or hormone perspective, mm-hmm. I can't be in the same seat in the same headspace every day. Sometimes I need to start my day out in the sun. Sometimes I want to get right into it. And so the ability to work in rhythms and cadences that are most natural to me and feel more optimized as a human across the board makes me feel so much more impactful in whatever work I'm doing.
What would you say are some of the biggest mistakes or just pieces of bullshit that other people put out that you think can almost be detrimental for somebody's long-term success, because maybe it creates like a lot of cash overnight, but they don't have that foundational sustainable business where it's like 10 years on, they're still making millions a year.
Well, I would definitely say the scaling too quickly model, and not that this is an option for everybody, but I see a lot of people get a little bit of cash and then they're like, okay, I need team and I want to scale into an agency or something of that sort. And they get themselves into these financial responsibilities that aren't truly monetizable or truly maintainable, because you see a couple few months of something happening, but it was most likely due to hand to mouth efforts. You were going out and doing it and then you were getting that. And if you don't, as your individual person, continue to perform at that immense level, you won't be able to maintain this without the infrastructure. And so signing up for financial responsibilities too quickly that you're not ready for, just enjoy the ride a little bit longer so that you can have that money for yourself. Because you will get 6 months down the road with two new team members and be like, well, my take home's less than it ever was. And somehow I'm still working more than I ever am because now I'm doing leadership and reviewal and direction. And I really didn't change anything. And I'm trying to scale by looking a little more professional on Instagram, but I'm making no more money.
I'm trying to scale by looking a little more professional on Instagram, but I'm making no more money. I feel like just puts everything in a perfect box of like what I'm talking about, right? So we know that obviously structure and strategy is very important. And as I love to always remind my community, the masculine structure allows our feminine flow. It allows us to obviously, you know, play to business in a way that supports our cycle, where we're at with life. If you're a mom, super essential, and whatnot. What are some of the biggest things that you've noticed with effective strategies at like a high level that you believe every business owner, whether you're in the beginning or whether you're, you know, years in, needs to make sure they are nailing for like a healthy foundation?
Well, almost tying back to what you were saying about personal brand as well, and then talking about money wins, I think there are so many more interesting things about me and my clients and you than just the amount of money you're making. Do I want to know so that I can subscribe to following, getting indoctrinated into what you're going to tell me if it's a money-making venture? Yes. Do I want to see, though, more so your expertise on display? I want to see what your clients are walking away with, what their lives look like, what this level of investment gets me, because leaning into just, I made this money is a far cry difference from somebody being able to do the same. And I don't know if anybody's into human design or what have you, but
I was actually going to ask you, like, what is your human design? Like, please tell me generator. Cause yeah. I'm like, you are. Yeah. Okay. I'm a generator. I'm like, you are like talking at my speed.
Yeah, I know. I love that. I remember, super side tangent, when you spoke in my Facebook group back in 2020 and the speed by which you fire hosed information, I was like, oh yes, I love it.
Meanwhile, all the reflectors and the projectors are like, wait, I need a nap like 10 minutes in.
You're like, you guys, I'm playing this in three parts. But when you,
branding, you were saying.
Yeah. If you understand, like if we're generators and you want to learn from us and you're not a generator, but you're inspired by the speed by which we give information and the amount of information we can give, and you know, that's worthwhile and you want to be in our ecosystem in whatever product style that is for that reason, we can be a great fit. But the thing about Monica and I is that we have enough years under our belt to where we know the different types and we build curriculum programs and processes for people other than ourselves. And so a lot of times I think with, people who just lean on money results, or, you know, to your question, like what's foundationally super important, doing shiny results that are just related to you exclusively and not showing your processes, flexing your expertise, getting in front of audiences, showing what your clients, even if there's two of them, what's happening and what they're getting, and how you are continually refining and bettering yourself every year, 7 years in, keep showing it. It will help people align with you in a way that says, I continually trust you, because what you're doing right now is going to be your reputation in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. And you don't want to get stuck in some sort of shiny object process. And I was just on a call with the gal who does our design the other day. And she said, I've had a lot of people from your audience coming over and they reference you and they say, oh, I just want something similar to Shannon's brand because it feels so smart. And I'd love to hear that, because the number one, I was super flattered and honored. Like the number one thing they say is like, oh, well, she makes a lot of money, so I want to understand this. Or it seems like she does X. She's like, nope, the business is smart. I want to do something that looks and sounds smart. And so that's a UVP for me. And I want to continue to share what I can do to impact your life on the free side and the paid side so that I have a personal brand that's long lasting. foundationally speaking, if right now all you, you know, with a minimum viable go live, as you refine and grow your skills, don't feel like you have to have it all figured out. Minimum viable go live, you are really stinking good at X, Y, and Z on social media. Start to share those tips, niche down for now, and then expand it as you go. The value and the results that you get today and tomorrow and the next day are going to be your bedrock for longevity.
Oh my God, I could not agree more. I did this whole like Instagram stories. I don't know what you saw the other day. This like girl was copying me, whatever. And so I did an Instagram stories about discernment. And, you know, I've obviously been in the industry for a while, and I get, I will like, you know, hear things from different people about experiences that they have, that they've had, and blah, blah, blah. And it is interesting to me how many people don't have the ability to adjust their delivery or, adjust their modalities or adjust their toolkit or their suggestions based on the person and based on not just like that person and how they want to operate, but that person and are they a mother? Do they have three kids? What's their history? Like, what are their actual goals in their business? And realizing that not every single person wants to actually be you, but they're inspired by you. And like, what's even more inspiring and more like just builds the trust from their perspective is you being able to be inspired for them whilst shifting your ideas in a way that actually aligns with them, because it's not going to breed them sustainable results in the long term if they're just trying to be you, because it's not going to last. They're going to try for 3 months and then give up. And then it's like, oh, working with so-and-so didn't work, when actually it could have worked if you were just able to like be a little bit more malleable with your delivery of things.
Yeah. Lifestyle functions as well. I have three kids. I'm, you know, still in corporate. That's so very important because it's not going to be one size fits all. I was just on a call yesterday. It was a sales call, and she was looking to hire me for making her a launch strategy. And she was super understanding and fabulous, but she kind of came in with the concept of, I know it's possible to make six-figure launches, and that's what you produce. So help me make a six-figure launch. I'm like, okay, let's start to unpack this. What's the program? How proven is it? How many people are in it? How much money has it made? What's your average amount of opt-ins? What do we think is really possible for this launch? Did you grow your audience more? You know, all these questions. And as we boil it down, I'm like, okay, if we convert at 2% of everybody who participates, which is going to be your industry average for where you're at right now in your audience warmth, we can get 14 people sold, 20 people sold, or 32 people sold at a low, mid, and a stretch goal based off of your current audience participation. And that's going to look like this much, or this much money based on the price of the program. And she's like, oh, like that is so not where I want it to be. And I'm like, right, but that's what we currently are working with. So here are our options to increase it. Do you have any paid ad budget? Do you want to do more of a ramp up so you have more time to warm your audience? Or on the flip side, we do options to make more money with downsells, reoffers, VIP tiers. We can hack the system, game the system a little bit, but I can't come in as this savior that's going to create you six-figure launches just because I'm going to make your freebie a little more strategic than it was before. We have got to understand the truth of where your business is at, and making $25,000 might be the best choice for you right now so that you can funnel that into more and funnel that into more.
Okay. I love this because I'm very much like, bring in the logic, look at the, like, do not ignore that, but also understand that you can totally manifest whatever you want, and you can, you know, have like a 10% conversion, and it can be that and blah, blah, blah. But it's that having that balance of being okay. And like your ego needs to be okay with, this is what the data is going to show, but of course, like, prove the data wrong. Right. And I feel like sometimes people can get trapped in not looking at the data. And then I think Tony Robbins, I can't remember the way he says it, but basically it's like, we overachieve what we can achieve in a year. We underachieve what we can achieve in 5 years. Right. So we have these ridiculous goals for in a year's time. And we're like, and then we think we're a failure for not achieving them, but over a 5 year period, we don't stretch ourselves enough, which I love. So from your perspective, like, where do you see, like, talk about data for a second and how important it actually is, but also maybe where the line is that you've seen for yourself and for your clients, where it is possible to like stretch it. So like expand our mind, but also like bring our ego down.
No, I totally agree. And anybody who just heard me riff on that thing and felt like, oh, geez, data head, like there's no manifestation. I agree with you. And I'm there too.
But I also, Shannon, want to say that like, I really love the data that you bring to the table. And that's something that I've always respected about you, because this industry, especially the coaching industry, can be very, you know, you make $1 million in a year. You can have a six-figure launch for your first launch. And it's not to say that that isn't possible.
Yeah.
But sometimes I worry that people set themselves up for failure because because they're like, oh, I'm going to throw the towel in because the business hasn't worked for, you know, the first 6 months. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't make a fucking dime for 2 years. Like, mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, did you see me back then? I was not making money. And these people are like, they're still crushing it, in my opinion, compared to me, because social media is so different back then. So it's like bringing them also back to reality in a way of just like, across the board, this is the reality for the majority of businesses.
Yeah, that's a great point too. On like, I made six figures on my first launch conversation, because when was your first launch? Was it 2 years in the business when you had a really warm audience who was begging you to sell to them? Well, then yeah, great. Six figures was easy because you did exactly what you had. But if you're trying to launch sooner, you know, all of that. So
yeah.
On the manifestation front, I remember on my very first launch that hit six figures, I had written down repeatedly every day for about a week prior to OpenCart, I'm making a minimum $100,000 on this launch. And I just wrote it over and over and over again. But the thing that I had between the data and the manifestation of it was data-wise, I knew what my numbers really were with the size of my audience at the time, which I think was about 6,000 Instagram followers, and then maybe like 2,000 to 3,000 email subscribers. They were really warm, but you know, there's only so much you can do with that. And my program was about $500. So I'm like doing the math of what's going to be possible, all that good stuff. And it didn't feel like I could hit it by myself. And I did not have a ton of extra capital to put into paid ads, but I was like, I don't care. I'm doing it. I know that I'm going to show up. I will be on social every day. I will be nurturing in the DMs. I'll do sales calls for a low cost course if I need to, because I want this to happen so badly. I will put in the sweat equity to make it happen. And I will put my money where my mouth is and do some paid ads so that I can pull in more people and I can retarget them throughout the campaign to remind them. And so with those powers combined, manifesting isn't just writing in the journal. It's also the scary step to say, I'm taking a calculated financial risk here and putting it into paid ads on top of what I've done with my organic. Based off of all these data and number points, I feel good about this. I'm a little freaked out, but let's do it. And we made like $102,000. And I was like,
oh my God,
like,
that's amazing. Yeah.
So,
but great. It is. It's like people forget it's not just the law of attraction, it's also the law of action. Like, you've got to take the aligned action. It doesn't mean that you need to kill yourself doing it, but you've got to take the action. I always grew up with the phrase in my head, like, God helps those that help themselves. And even though I'm now like much more spiritual, but I'm like, yeah, the universe helps those that help themselves. If you just say that you want to find your dream man, but you never go out and talk to people, it's like, well, what, you're gonna think he's gonna be the postman that rocks up to your door? Maybe. Yeah. But like, that's a pretty low chance of that happening. You know, especially if you're in my community, like, no offense to the postman, but you probably want a man that isn't the postman. Like, if you're listening to my podcast,
it's not a steamy romance novel.
It's not.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. So, on the data front, and especially given like your corporate history and everything, can you share with us even some data that people could just start to make sure they're paying attention to now? Or, you know, most people, let's say, they're 2-3 years into their business, so there is a little bit of data there. This isn't really going to be as relevant for people that are starting out their business. What data should we be paying attention to? And then tell us why it is worth investing in understanding our data, or in hiring somebody to like just really know our data and therefore tell us about it.
Yeah. I mean, data can be so overwhelming, especially to somebody who's just not, that's not their forte. They feel like, ugh, they want to throw up the second that they have to look at some sort of tracking spreadsheet. So I totally get it. To take it down to ground level, when you track a user's behavior across, let's say they start on social, they join your email list, they click over to your website. You've got softwares that help you track that. So you look at this journey and you say, okay, where did they stop taking action? That's the place where something needs to be optimized. And that's really what it helps you do. Because a lot of times, let's take launching, somebody will say, well, I didn't sell. And I say, okay, well, let's look at the whole journey. Did they opt in for the freebie? Yes. Did they open your email? Yes. Did they then click from the email to the sales page? No, I have a very low click rate. Okay. What wasn't the subject line of the email because they opened it. So it was the way you were messaging and presenting the offer in the email. So now we can go and fix your messaging. Because if we don't do that tracking, we just sit there and we're like, okay, well, it was me. I'm an idiot. It's the offer. It's my business. I hate everything. I know nothing. Imposter syndrome. I'm now taken out of the game for 3 to 6 months.
Yes. Okay. I love that. In terms of like open rates and conversion rates that you were mentioning before. So confirm, so around 2% is the industry average that you said. And what would you say is like the industry average or a good open rate that we should all be aiming for our emails? And then obviously also like for you taking out the industry average, what do you say is good conversion rate if you are having a warm audience?
Yeah. So starting with the launch part of it, I would say your launches for your warm people who are participating, not your whole audience, can convert between 2 and 10% dependent on how warm they are. The gal that I was giving the example of had a pretty cold new audience. So that's why that was so low. So launching can be higher because you're really active in participating. Whereas for people who are pursuing passive income and they want to point a lead towards a free resource that then detonates a series of emails that sells for you, also great. That's going to be a lower conversion because you're not there with them live. Just it's sterile. Yeah. And so people don't convert well. So that's where you get between like 1 and 4% on those conversions. Email open rates, you want to see, like, let's make it the goal to be 30, 35, 40%, but an average would be 20% on an open. The funny thing about opens, though, that they're just sort of skewed nowadays is that in 2021, Apple updated their privacy settings that doesn't allow for you to track opens when somebody's using Gmail apps in the same way.
Oh, I didn't know that. Interesting.
Yeah. So it's doing it to where what it does is if somebody opens their Gmail app and your email is in the app at that time, it counts it because it cannot get the intimate data to know they opened your email in particular. And so you're just getting this, well, they opened their Gmail app data. So people are getting these much higher open rates than they have been. And the industry's like, I got my open rates to 40, 50%. Again, discernment or having enough information.
Right.
It's not that you suddenly started having the most badass subject lines of all time. It's that Gmail kind of did us dirty with not being able to track. So what you want to look at for email open rates is your trends. What if you're just consistently around 35 to 45%, just don't even attach anything to that number, but let that be the truth of it. So when your, you know, email seven in the sequence dips down to 15%, oh, that one came too quickly on the heels of the previous email, or it had a really boring subject line.
Love that. Love that. So what were some mindset shifts that you, and also energy shifts that you had to take when you were leaving corporate and then entering into entrepreneurship and having your own business? And obviously you are a generator. And I will say, I do believe that across the board, like generators just have a little bit of an easier time, like not to put a label on it, but like we have so much fucking energy, but that doesn't mean that, you know, as a projector or reflector, you can't be an entrepreneur. You just need to like hone in on how you can do it in a way that suits you. But what were some mindset shifts and energy shifts that you felt like really helped you to step out of that corporate world and then come into this world? Because it's a very different world. And maybe you can talk on that a little bit, on just some of the biggest differences, especially managing a team and the speed at which things happen in on like online businesses versus corporate, because the speed is very different.
Yeah, so true. I would say in corporate, you are kind of, you've got a boss and you're given what you're working on. You might have autonomy dependent on your leadership level, but there's still a point of, you know, the company's at large vision goals for the quarter, you're working towards that. When you're on your own, there is this duality of what in the world do I do today? And I have so much to do today. And it's trying to find this, like, not panic in your chest, regulate your nervous system, center of the Venn diagram that allows for you to balance those two worlds at the same time. So I would always just start with writing down six things that I'm doing today, which I heard early on the Skinny Confidential podcast. And I was like, okay, that's a simple tip. I'm just going to do that. And she was saying, I only do six things so that, because I could write 10, 20, 30, 40 things. There's always that much to do. And I write them in the order that they have to be done. And I do not move on to the next one until the previous one is done, albeit there's some situations where you're waiting for a feedback or what have you. And so it keeps you so managed in these time blocks throughout the day, versus you can start to subscribe to different productivity hacks, like time blocking, and then, you know, use this, get this project management software, make these sort of lists. And then you spend 2 weeks just trying to figure out how to manage yourself. And
you're literally
not anything. Yeah. There's just so much in the beginning that it's like, get a notebook, write down six things, don't pass go or collect 200 until each one is done, and see how much more you're getting done each day and how much more free you feel. Because when you get through your list at 2 p.m. and you're like, cool, I'm going to go on a walk, I'm going to go call my friend, I'm going to go see my niece, you have so many more options and balanced fulfillment without constantly feeling guilty like you should be doing more.
My new free business masterclass about breaking through your business ceilings is so fucking juicy. You guys want to make sure that you are able to join us and access it. I reckon it's probably going to end up being about an hour and a half long because it is so good. My notes are so long. I had to refrain myself from just continuing on because I was like, Monica, this cannot be 3 hours long. But between the vibey images that I'm giving you guys and the really tangible information, it's going to allow you to really take a look at your own business and where you are potentially holding yourself back and where the gaps are in your business that you need to start working on so you can take things to the next level. So if you don't have your own business yet, but you want to have your own business, this masterclass is not for you because you won't get anything out of it. But if you do have a business already and you want to get your business to that next level, you want to expand things, you want to quantum leap things, whatever it is, make sure that you register. You can just do so via clicking the link in the description, and I will see you during the masterclass. Like, what are three things that people don't realize are so important to do at the beginning? And maybe they're not even necessarily that important because they're such small things, but like when we're starting our business, it's like focus on these things before you go on to like the fun branding stuff.
Yeah, I would say, like we talked earlier, kind of a minimum viable product that you've got to be able to go live with. If you think about it, it's so weird when we're monetizing ourselves as people, but if you think about product-based businesses, they get their hero product, their minimum viable go live. That is their star, that's prototyped, that's what they're going forward with. So you want that as well for yourself, and then be open to once somebody's in your ecosystem and saying, hey, I really like this product, but I would want it to have more of this and less of that. You got it. I'm customizing it for you, and I'll figure out the systems to make sure I maintain that on the back end, but I don't need to market these 7 iterations of the offer. I'm just going to keep doing what's getting people to come in and then customize as you go, refine as you go. Another thing would be when you think about your digital marketing strategy, like where am I going to find people is just the biggest thing on your mind. You're kind of split into 3 verticals. You've got social media marketing, your email list and communities where you're nurturing your people. And then you've got search platforms, YouTube, podcast, blog, all of that. And I find a lot of times people think, oh, I'm going to do the YouTube or the podcast because it's going to put me out there and get my message to the masses faster. But the difference between social media and search is that social media interrupts people for you on your behalf, and search, somebody has to be searching for you to get served that. So while that is great, if you put all your effort into that and you're using the wrong terms that your people aren't using yet because you don't yet know those key things they're searching, you're not going to get served when they're searching for something else. So use social media to your benefit. Start to grow an audience. I would get them over to your email list as quickly as possible because it's going to be a faster path to conversion. And you guarantee that you will get delivered to their inbox, you know, foregoing any sort of spam stuff, versus on social, you don't know if your post is going to get served to everybody. So I always recommend in your digital marketing strategy, start with one social platform that you're comfortable with. Typically recommend Instagram because it's got multimedia. People actually do work with businesses and people on that, blah, blah. Yeah. In your link in bio, have one simple free resource that is completely related to your offer. Once they join to get access to that, send them a couple follow-up emails and then reach out to each person coming in directly and talk to them about your offer, where they're at and what they need. And that effort and that process will give you 3 clients in a month, let's say. Obviously can't promise that, but so much faster than a website.
Oh my God. It's coming back to that whole thing of like, when you are starting out a business, do not expect people to just be reaching out to you and just buying through a website page when you've got no testimonials, they don't fucking know you, they've never heard of you. It doesn't mean you need to be cold DMing people because that's a whole other fucking topic. But I loved what you said of then once they've gotten the free resource or once they've watched the masterclass or they've listened to the podcast episode that you've sent them, reach out to them because you're not reaching out to 300 people. You're reaching out to 10, 20, 30 people, which you and I both did plenty of reach out and plenty of sales calls and plenty of that hard stuff. And I can't tell you how many people, you know, 6 months into business, they're like, oh my God, I fucking hate sales calls. I never want to do them again. I'm like, I did sales calls for like 3 years before I was like, I don't need them anymore. And it wasn't about, oh, I don't like them. It was actually that I didn't need them and my audience didn't need them because I had all these years under my belt. But I'm sure you agree with me that if you're in the beginning of your business, you have to put the time in to converse with your audience, to converse with the leads and to get on the sales calls, even if it means they don't end up buying. You've learned so much more about that client and about your warm audience and how you can talk to them. So like there is so much that comes out of a sales call, even if you don't actually make the sale.
Yeah, so true. I always say my intake, my sales calls are my muses for my content because they are telling you in their exact terms what's wrong, what they need, what they want, what their struggles are, emotion, like everything you need to produce to attract more of them and convert is in that sales call. So that's
really that. Great.
When people are like, I don't know what to post on social. I'm like, go get on some sales calls because you will really.
Oh, no, seriously. I'm like, I just look at my clients, like my old clients' forms. I'm like, what are people struggling with? And then I'll just pull a topic. I'm like, okay, we're talking about this.
Yes, exactly. It's so good. But yeah, I mean, there's this glorification of like, I haven't done sales calls in a year. And I just think it's a, when you don't need it because your systems and your audience are so warm, then great, don't waste their time. But I think it's a weird glorification that you're asking somebody to pay someone on the internet that they've never met, probably thousands of dollars, just off of your social content and website, let's say, without giving them 15 minutes of your time, but they're going to become this really precious client and they're going to give you what could be like all of their savings. And you can't give 15 minutes on the front end. Like, it just feels like a really weird energy juxtaposition for me.
I cannot agree with you more. Who was I? I was talking to somebody about this the other day and they were like, isn't it weird? I can't remember who it was, but anyway, they were like, isn't it weird how like these people, you know, they used to do one-on-one clients or they used to do sales calls and now they're like bitch about how much they hated doing one-on-one clients, how much they hate having sales calls, and they glorify, I don't have any one-on-one clients. I don't have to spend any time with my clients. I just get paid $20,000 a day. And I'm from a consumer perspective, sometimes I'm like, that kind of is concerning because it's like you don't care about the person that is paying you the money. Mm-hmm. It kind of comes across like you just want to make money. And I'm like, you know what? If that's what you want to make, that's fine. But like, keep your mouth shut, because from my perspective as like a potential customer or somebody that's watching your audience, like watching your content, it makes me feel like if I paid and if I had a question, it wouldn't get answered or you wouldn't care about answering it thoroughly because you're not trying to run a business to help me. You're trying to run a business to make money.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say when we got there. I'm like, I'm looking at that saying, pop off for you, but I'm not investing.
It's not my thing. And I know people will glorify like, you know, I only have to work 2 hours a day. And like, you know what? That's great. And maybe one day I'll only have to work 2 hours a day, but I love my job and I know you're the same and I love working and I love helping people. And even if I got to a point where I only get to work 2 hours a day, which I know will happen when I'm a mom, I'm not going to glorify it because it's not like I hated working 8 hours a day. Because my concern then is, so what, all those past clients that you were one-on-one clients with, or that you, you know, spent hours on the phone with 5 years ago, you're now saying that you actually hated it. Like, I would be mortified if I was somebody's old client and then thinking, wait, I paid all that money and you actually despised being on the phone with me.
Yes, exactly. You know,
so no one, just take it from us, no one do that, please.
And also consider the fact that you're in a different business model than other businesses in the world. And I think that's something that gets a little bit misinterpreted. I only work 1 hour a day on Bungalow Coffee because it's its own sustaining restaurant, essentially with a manager and processes and daily customers. And I do some marketing, I do some check-ins, some operations, some team meetings, whatever that looks like on any given day. But no, I'm not there because I'm not the facilitator. You're starting where you're the facilitator. And in that process, you can start to scale up to where you do stop doing one-on-one because you've got a suite of courses. And then you've got a group program where you are showing up once per month, but you're going to be touching your business. You're going to be creating content. You're the CEO, you're the talent. There's stuff that you're not getting off of your to-do list because it's a personal brand where you are facilitating an expertise that is rooted in transformation and results. And that's not a cup of coffee. That's not a pastry. So I can't get myself out of it when I'm selling myself, so to speak.
I completely agree. And it's like, people aren't buying the business. They're buying you. They want you. They want your expertise. They want your thoughts on their product. It's different if somebody was buying into a program where they knew somebody else was running the program. Like, that's obviously a different thing. And, you know, but again, it's always about the messaging. It's about the way that you explain it. It's because you could explain it in a completely different way of I'm only working 2 hours a day now because I've stepped into motherhood and I'm enjoying it so much. And those 2 hours a day are so precious to me that I get to work, blah, blah, blah. Yep. And again, it's like, you're not bad mouthing than the fact that you're no longer working 6 hours a day. You're not glamorizing it and saying that it's better than back in the day when you were working six. You're actually just allowing yourself to celebrate the new season of life that you're in, and people will respect you for that, not think less of you for it.
Yep, absolutely. And if you're selling something to where you're saying, you know, I'm doing this with no clients because, and I love my clients and thank you for getting me here, but I'm actually making more money because I'm not doing as much time for dollars work. So I've got these courses and they are proven and they're getting people incredible results. I'm in that community for 2 hours per day and that's where I spend my time. So come into the courses. You will get access to me in the community. This is where I, like, if I'm not with my child, which is my most important thing, that is where you get access to me. So that's why you buy this program. And I'm so proud of this business and these results. Immediately. Sounds amazing.
Yes. Yeah, agreed. Like you and I can't take a million clients anymore these days. Like I don't have the capacity. So when somebody comes in and they want to be a one-on-one client, I'm obviously apologetic that I don't have any space for it, but I have another option that is still going to get them the results that they want to get. And I'm going to ensure that like I lay out for them what they need to be doing to get where they want to go. I'm not just going to be like, oh, too bad, no space, like don't care. So on all of this then, Shannon, you did a post, maybe it was yesterday, on some of your predictions for 2024. I can't remember whether it was like just social media and or business in general. One thing for me that I've noticed from my audience and even just for myself is I am loving going back into long form content. I think most people are becoming, or a lot of people that just have that like self-intelligence are becoming aware that scrolling on Instagram and feeling this need to be on Instagram all the time, you're going to miss out on somebody's content because you love following them. It is stressful on your nervous system and it makes you feel like you're just constantly missing out. It's that kind of FOMO that's becoming like a somatic experience. And so people are loving being able to read a blog or watch a YouTube video or something where they can watch it when it suits them, not, went before it's going to expire. What are some of the predictions that you see? And maybe even let's start with like, what have you seen as some of the trends that have died in the last 10 years or that people just don't care about anymore? And then what do you predict people are going to be wanting more of this year, but then also next year?
Yeah, one of the things on the whole long form that I had in the newsletter was the rise of longer form video, longer form newsletters, and the less filtered, more and like literally putting a filter on your face, but also filtered conversations because we've all heard it. We've heard the surface level and they're like, give me something real. I think the internet and the online space has gotten more saturated and sophisticated than it has before. Most everybody's invested in some sort of offer, has some sort of experience with this, and they're looking for a person that they resonate with because the values, because of what they aspire to when they consume from them. And I think we also, with the rise of TikTok, that's really shifted a lot of our expectations when we're consuming. If you go and scroll there, you will stop and watch a 4 or 5 minute video about somebody's wild story about their personal life that you don't know from Adam. You don't know the characters, you know nothing, but you're willing to listen to it because it's got this almost FaceTiming with a friend feel. And you're willing to consume 3 interesting videos versus rapid scroll, 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 and consume 20 short form things that you can't remember the rest of. And you walk away with these interesting stories and dynamics or facts that you're learning. And I think because we're enjoying that there, and I think that trends for video are starting more on TikTok and then coming to Instagram and other platforms, that you're more willing on Instagram to sit and consume and listen and watch somebody. And it doesn't mean don't present yourself in a beautiful way if that's your brand, of course, like put it together, get the light, make it great. But sitting down and saying, this is my expertise and this is what I want to tell you today to help you right now, I think is coming on the rise more than trying to hack the hooks and the algorithm. Because, and so second part of the question, what's dying? I think the reels where people do something B-roll and then it says like, do you super sexy hook? Like, do you want to know the way to make 6 figures in 1 week? And then it's like, read the caption, or it makes you rewatch it because things are flitting on the screen super fast and you can't read any of them. So you're trying to rewatch it 5 times to get it. I think we're all kind of getting to a collective eye roll where we're like, oh my gosh, okay, if I'm here to watch a video, give me something in a video. If you're going to give me something written, I'll read the caption, I'll look through the carousel, I'll read the blog. Like the hack.
Like substance.
Yes.
It's like people can see through when it's just like a sales pitch or when they're going to be sold to something else.
Yeah, I think also they can see through when you're just trying to drive up your views. And I know that you're not giving value in the caption or anything. And I'm not dissing anybody who's doing that or if it's worked for you because marketing is completely arbitrary like that. But
It's fucking so arbitrary like that, right? It's like I'll post the most. Okay, I posted this one of my first reels that ever went viral. We will never understand it. It was literally me jumping off the side of a ship, and then it was my fiance jumping off the side of a ship. That's all it was, but it just like riled people up or something in the comments.
Oh.
And it went fucking viral. And it was just like, all it said was the difference between a man's nervous system and a woman's nervous system. And like, obviously, people don't like it when I do like differences because they're like, oh no, we're equal, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, and so it just like pissed people off or something. And we never to this day like really was like, why did that go viral? Like we have to assume it was just like the topic or something because it was literally me jumping off the side of a ship. And it's always those reels where you literally put no effort into it.
Yeah.
I had that reel sitting in my draft section for like months, and I kept being like, no, this will do so badly. And then it ended up doing so good.
Yeah. I think there's this thing I've heard recently, like a new term floated around the space called controlled controversy. And so that where there, you don't have like this whole, you know, cancel Monica, something crazy happened. You've got this controlled right. controversy where it's just happening in the caption or in the comments of one reel. People are having their feelings. They're, you know, discussing back and forth. And you're like, maybe I feel some type of way like about this. In the moment that I saw the first few negative comments, my heart did drop out of my butt. But after I calmed down for a second, realized what was happening here, you're all entitled to your own opinions and feel free to run up my views.
Yes. No, people still comment on it. And they're just like, is anybody worried about the tetanus? I'm like, what? Like, that's what you're thinking about? Like, what? Like, it's so bizarre. But I love the controlled controversy. I love that. Okay, let's do this one because I love to talk about the non-glamorous sides, as you know. So what were some of the things in your business that maybe you thought were going to be a little bit glamorous that absolutely were not? Really challenging aspects, just really dirty aspects, really hard aspects that you had to move through throughout growing your business.
Mm-hmm. We rented, where you have a lease for an office space at the end of 2020. Yes. So we got the coffee shop and it's a three-story building. And so the first story is coffee shop. And then the third, they had open offices by the same renter, landlord. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't making it so specific, like, I'm only giving you the coffee space if you take the third space, but he was kind of like milking me in that way. And I had starry-eyed, like, I always say that I blame the movies of the 90s and the 2000s, like the type of movies you'd watch at dry bar, rom-com style, where you've got How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Kate Hudson's Andy Anderson, you've got Devil Wears Prada. There's like this
Devil Wears Prada. I'm sorry. Yeah. That movie just makes me want to fucking have an office, which have I, an office, but now yours. You're going to tell us like the real story of having an office, but yes. I'm like, yeah, but I want to wear heels into an office, Shannon, every day and like take my coat off and give it to my assistant.
Yes. Exactly. And we were all millennial women in business now. We're raised on this. And so yes. We have it hardwired that when you get this opportunity to have that life, you're like, oh my gosh, say less. Number one. Number two, I had a team that was in Las Vegas and then many of them are still with me, but just coincidentally, one married a military man and got restationed. One had a guy that was in LA and she moved there for him. Like all these little things just started to pop off to where now they are not here. And so I pay for this very expensive office for now. It's a storage unit, basically. I mean, I still use my personal office, but it's a storage unit for all of our coffee catering stuff, which is great to have more than I would ever pay for a storage unit. But it is $7,500 a month for me to pay for this office that I do not use except to go to and film videos and, you know, have calls. And I have been paying for that on a monthly basis, like a full-time team. That's like an $80,000 team member salary.
Yeah.
The end of 2020, because I just kind of went tunnel vision and got excited. The way that I wrote it off to myself was like, oh, the landlord's kind of strong-arming me. So I need to get both. If I want the coffee shop, I got to get the office. But there was a vision, and the vision was a reality in 2021 when the team was still around. And then when the team started to depart, we then transformed it into regularly hosting in-person events. So then that kind of paid for itself. So I was able to monetize off of having it for a year or so. But by 2022, 2023, now 2024, I'm really just not using it. And I'm trying to find purposes for it, but the in-person stuff.
Wait, how long are you locked into this rent?
5 years. So I will be done in end of 2025. So 2 more years.
Jeez. Mm-hmm. There's a great example of like shiny object syndrome. Yes. We all have it. And like, I have it, and I've had to train myself to be able to like really think critically. And you know what I do so much now that I'm like, ladies, do this. I literally always ask a man when I'm shiny about anything, because I'm like, I need that like logical perspective to sometimes force me not to do something, even though I really want to do it, because a month later I'm going to be stuck with like this beautiful office in New York City that I don't fucking use, but like that I want.
Completely. So, I mean, yeah, I could continue to find different ways to try to, like, I've got a mastermind and they're coming to Vegas in April and we're using the space, of course, for hot seating and all that great stuff. So there is benefit. We rent it out. We do different things for it, but it's $7,500. I'm not making that per month. So, that is definitely like, do not, to the point earlier, of like scaling too quickly or grabbing something that you think you'll need because you're just excited about the potential of it. That if I had done without that investment, it'd be very different.
Yeah. Wow. Any other like non-glamorous things that you've had to deal with in your business that you feel like people deserve to know that it's okay if these things happen?
I would say maybe the human element that you just don't even think about how much you're going to need to develop other people while also doing so much yourself.
I was going to say like managing people. Because that is that has been like the hardest thing for me is manage and like learning how, like, it is hard. I think people just think that it's easy to learn to manage a team. I don't know about you, but like personally for me, that has been something that I have struggled with for the longest time. And now I'm really confident in, but I needed like so much training for like leadership training of how to actually manage people, to read so many books, just even like having those somewhat hard conversations when someone's not doing a good job and like you're not trying to be a bitch, you're not trying to fire them, and you don't want them to leave because you can't have them leave because you fucking need them.
Yeah.
But you also are like, pull up your socks, do better.
Yeah, pull up your socks, do better. yes, all of that. I, for a long time, one of my biggest personal development transformations was not going like, to quote Taylor Swift, I'm the problem, it's me. Because I would always try to write off their bad performances. Maybe I didn't give enough direction, which I give
too much
direction, you know? And maybe, and not that I don't have any fault in this, but I just consistently would be like, well, maybe this and maybe that. And I would say, where was I wrong? And I think that's a benefit, but it was way skewing to the point where I wasn't giving enough feedback, or I wasn't really having hard conversations with people who probably needed to be, you know, let go sooner than they were. And that taxed the business, that taxed me, that taxed my, you know, personal life too, because then I'm overworked, mm-hmm. I'm stressed, I'm complaining about this person and I'm not having conversations, because then my husband will go, well, then let's talk to them. And I'm like, well, I'm, you know,
right.
I'm just talking, I'm just venting. I'm not looking for solution, because yes. I think maybe I didn't X, Y, and Z. And you get in your own head about this process.
Yep.
Anyways, that lasted for a couple of years before another thing is like, was taking, and this is just me being a trusting person. I'm one of those people who gives full trust and then you lose it. I don't say,
oh my God, I'm the same. And I had to learn that that wasn't necessarily always a good trait.
Yeah.
I used to think it was a great trait of mine until I was in too many of these situations, just like you, where I would make it all my own fault. And then somebody would stay for way too long. And then it would kind of like, unfortunately, be more of like a blow up of a situation where I'm like, wow, I really could have, like, I actually could have maybe prevented having to fire that person had I had those hard conversations, because you never want to fire somebody and it's hard fucking training new people.
Yes. I have gotten better. Like you said, you have as well, because you learn kind of like, oh, duh. And I'm looking at myself on it. I'm like, wow, that was bizarre of me to just be so open about it. But an example of that in work relation is just taking everything on a resume and an interview at complete and 100% accuracy, and not being like, yeah, duh, people put their best foot forward. And so I would hear these really beautiful promises about skills and expertise and things they've done. And I'm like, amazing. Okay, great. They come into the role. And I'm like, where's that? What's that? I must not be giving. And so it's then this combo of like, I trusted what you said 100%. Then I think mm-hmm. I'm not doing something to set you up for success, because you told me this is how you were and I totally trust and believe you. And then being bamboozled by the end of it, where you just wake up one day and you're like, oh yeah, that was silly of me. You probably need a little bit more training and tenure to make sure that you're supported in this, which is great. I'm looking forward to pouring into you. But I just came into things so blindly for some reason. And that definitely changed after a couple of years.
For me, like learning how to hire people properly has been such a game changer, because I would do the same thing like I was saying before, but also, you know, I feel like learning how to hire is something that you really have to learn, because otherwise you will go through mistake after mistake after mistake, and you could hire somebody that looks great on paper, blah, 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 blah. And you think, oh, I could just train them up. But if they don't have the personality, if there is a personality clash, and if they don't want to have the role that you're envisioning for them, it's not going to work. Like, I can't tell you, I'm sure you agree with me, so many people these days, just like, they, even though you could have this like big vision, they don't want it. And that's okay. But it's like, if you're then thinking one thing and you're getting excited for their role because you're the CEO, and so you have all these big visions and blah, 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 like that's all great. But if it's not aligning with the person, you're just going to end up like having another person to fire or having to retrain somebody new. And it's just like a whole fucking shit show. Man, learning to hire has been such a journey. But now that I actually know how to do it, I'm like, okay, it is hard to do, but once you know how to do it, you're like, thank God, and you have that confidence. Because otherwise, like for me, it really threw me, because it would make me then just not want to hire. It kind of then gave it like factors into that belief of, I'm just better off doing it myself. Like, I can't trust anyone. No one can do a job better than me, I definitely feel like you feel in the beginning of running a business, because it's hard to let go of control because you've done it all yourself, but you have to learn how to let go of control if you want to be able to grow your business and not burn out. But of course, when you keep hiring the wrong people, it then exacerbates that belief and proves it right that nobody is trustworthy and that you can't hire anybody to do your job as well as you can.
Yep. It's a really interesting switch into, I am now managing direction, SOPs, not writing them, but making sure they are clean, that your work is up to snuff, all of that instead of doing the work. And a big thing, I guess this kind of comes back to like, what are some plot twists between corporate and entrepreneurship, is that you are going to eventually to scale the business. If you've got this big vision for it, you're eventually going to be more of a people manager than you are actually making and facilitating the product a lot of times. And the fun that you experience in the beginning is definitely going to shape shift a lot to where you do end up running more like you did in corporate. And now you're in just sort of this corporate leadership role because you have to continually maintain them. And the thing about that maintenance is that you will keep doing it yourself and even bottlenecking and hurting their performance, redoing their work, making them feel unfulfilled, they churn out, et cetera, if you don't step into that role. And the importance of maintaining that role is that a lot of times in these personal brands, it's your reputation that they're communicating. It's your thoughts that they're communicating. And so you have to look at it and you have to maintain it. Or you have to do it yourself, but you know, it's like a double-edged sword. So yeah, that's also kind of.
Shannon, I could keep going and I'm like zipping my fucking mouth because I'm like, wait, I have another thing we could talk about. So anyway, I'm going to zip my mouth. Otherwise we're going to be here for 2 hours. Are there any last things that you want to share with the audience about your journey? Any tips that you want to give them? Any last departing pieces?
Well, let's see. On the hiring front, it's interesting on the bungalow coffee side, because the difference there is that we're not looking as much for skill as we are looking for culture fit. And so the ability to say, Ike, you already have base level skills in customer service, and maybe you've worked in some sort of food before, so you get it, but you're a great culture fit, and then I will teach you coffee, is sometimes one of the best things and best opportunities for you, versus in your online business, you do look for skills first because you're desperately trying to find somebody who's going to be really good at editing the podcast, writing the newsletter, and then you can forego that culture. And everything that you're doing in your business, be that with any stakeholders, those are the customers, those are the leads and followers, those are your team members. It is such a game of maintaining how you are supporting all of those different stakeholders in your business with that culture first mentality, and then quality product as well. So I guess in summary, not to be too altruistic about it, what you can do now to just really commit to your values, your culture, and what you want to be known as foundationally is going to make the every little new level, new devil, and everything that you go through in business be so much cleaner as you go, because you have been true to you throughout the process. And don't let the too many tactics, too much information, too much shiny object cloud you as you go. Just stay really true to that, because 2, 3, 4 years in, you don't want to have to then go through the messy spaghetti bowl of rebuilding what you had started because you got distracted on the path with wanting to infuse somebody else's vision into yours.
I love it. Thank you so much, Shannon, for all of the wisdom and the tips and just like the intelligence that you were able to deliver today. I appreciate it so much. You are full of wisdom. You could have just kept up with the rapid fire with like all of the information that you know in your head. Where can everybody find you to tune into your work to get more goodness from you?
Yeah, well, thank you for that. That's so edifying. Just come and see me on Instagram at The Social Bungalow. That is where I hang out and then can kind of point you in the right direction for whatever you're working on, be that in business or in corporate.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time. Everyone go check out Shannon. She is a wealth of knowledge, has the best resources, and we'll see you in the next episode. Okay. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you everyone for listening to today's juicy podcast episode. I hope that you absolutely loved it because it was so jam-packed. Please make sure that you tag me and also Shannon in your Instagram stories when you share it. Shannon was very, very generous to give up an hour of her time to talk with us all today and to give us so much wisdom. So I would appreciate if you could give that value exchange back in return by simply just sharing her on your Instagram stories, tagging Monica Yates Health, and then also The Social Bungalow. And of course, if you loved the episode, please leave a review on my podcast channel on iTunes. Once you leave a review, you can send a screenshot to media@monicayateshealth.com, and we will send you a free little gift. It's a beautiful meditation for bringing all of your energy back to yourself. So if you are a people pleaser, then this is a fantastic one for you to be listening to. You cannot find it anywhere on my website, so the only way that you can get access to it is to leave a review. Thank you guys for listening, and we will see you in the next episode.